Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. Now, this is a show about what matters in life, our mind, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. Now, in this show, I'll bring you the latest study regarding the differences between how girls and boys learn in virtual reality. And then I will talk to Dr. Fardat Fateri, author of The Culture of Excellence, A Culture of Excellence, The Art Discipline and the Practice of a Breakthrough Leadership. And you can call us on the studio line to talk to me or Dr. Fateri at 951-922-3532. We'll be right back.
Dr. Fujian Zain is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fujian has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fujian.com. That's www.fujian.com.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice, Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice, Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk, KMET, 1490 AM, and on the Internet Stream.
We're back. Now, the study is from a virtual learning lab at the University of Copenhagen, published in the Journal of Computer Assisted Learning. The teacher is just as important in a virtual learning environment as in a normal classroom. But this study shows that boys and girls differ greatly in terms of how they learn best. Boys learn best when their virtual teacher comes in the form of a drone. Yes, a drone, a flying drone. While girls get more knowledge from the virtual reality teaching when they're taught by a young female researcher type named Marie. Isn't that interesting? A few years from now, students in schools all over the world will receive part of their education in virtual learning environments, wearing virtual reality goggles. The students will be able to enter three-dimensional stimulated places and situations that they would normally not have access to because it would be too expensive, too dangerous, or physically impossible. So teaching via virtual reality technology is spreading widely. These years in international studies predict that this will revolutionize the way we learn. Oh, I bet. And we do it so much faster because it's audiovisual. And it's experiential. So using the virtual reality, students can learn about the cells in the human body while traveling into the bloodstream or explore the degree of plastic pollution in the oceans. And they can also conduct complicated experiments using expensive lab equipment and dangerous chemicals just by putting a pair of virtual reality goggles that immediately offers very realistic and lively experiences. According to several of these reports, now the cost of virtual reality technology will be reduced so much over the next 2 to 3 years that it will be included in everyday classroom teachings for around 15 million students across the nation before 2025. This prognosis is backed by a lot of companies, large investments in developing virtual reality for teaching by tech giants such as Apple and Google and Samsung. Now, students' ability to identify with a pedagogical agent improves their level of learning. Now, this brings an exciting possibility to actually make education more appealing to their students. This is important as children's interest really decreases in middle school. And there's specifically a desire to increase female students' interest in science, technology, engineering, and math subjects. So results show that the boys' concentration and focus on the task rises when their virtual teacher is a non-traditional teaching figure, like a robot or a drone. Now, they also see these types of pedagogical agents are more effective in terms of the boys' learning outcomes, possibly because they portray some of the superhero qualities that appeal widely to the boys, especially at the age of middle school. And because they resemble the agents, the boys are used to interact with in computer games, right? So, different for girls, though. While girls learned when the virtual reality teachers, was a young female researcher named Marie. So it seems like if they're choosing an identity that they want to learn from and they want to use as a model for themselves, girls use a serious and yet young female researcher as someone who can teach them, and they could see themselves as that. Marie, and then boys would prefer to have some superhero kind of concepts such as the drones. Now, the younger the student, the more important it appears to be that they can relate to the virtual reality teachers. University students, for instance, have not been found to learn better when instructed by a figure that resembles themselves, whereas the ability to mirror oneself in the teaching figure has been identified as being very important for students in middle school classes. Well, I think that's pretty appropriate to see, because obviously as children are growing and moving into their teen years, they're much more apt to look at role models that they want to be when they grow up. So by the time that they're students of universities, their identities are pretty much set and they're trying to find themselves, not necessarily learn from their parents or another teacher figure. They're trying to learn as who they are. They're trying to figure out who they are. And that's probably why you could see more of the effectiveness of the virtual learning modalities in the preschool, elementary and preschool up to high school. So that's what's going on as we're going toward the AI, artificial intelligence, and virtual reality. I think it's exciting times that are coming. So that's the latest research. Now, don't go anywhere. We're coming back with Dr. Fardat Fateri, who is the author of A Culture of Excellence, The Art, Discipline, and Practice of Breakthrough Relationships.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan. Dr. Fushan has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk, KMET, 1490 AM, and on the Internet Stream.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Welcome back again. This is the Inner Voice, and I'm Dr. Fujian Zane, and I'm delighted to have Dr. Fardat Fateri, who's the president and the CEO of International Education Corporation, which owns and operates accredited college across colleges across the United States. He is the author of A Culture of Excellence, The Art, Discipline, and Practice of Breakthrough Leadership. Dr. Fateri is a part of a small group of chief executives in American higher education today with significant experience in the imperative but rare interwoven triad of academic, operations, and business verticals. With over 25 years of experience in higher education and graduating from UC Irvine and Harvard universities, Dr. Fateri has served as a professor, department chair, dean, regional director, college president, division president, chief academic officer, everything you could ever imagine, board director and president and CEO of several medium to large size nonprofit market-funded and privately held systems, and we have him with us now. Welcome, Dr. Fateri.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation. Happy to be here.
Wonderful. Well, I know that as I was reading your book, it seems like you were on top of the executive chart everywhere. And then suddenly you decided to let go of all of that and come and join this wonderful organization for higher education. Tell us about that. What brought you into letting go of one group and coming and creating the International Education Corporation?
Yeah, great question. You know, I was previously a senior executive at a very large market-funded corporation. But like many others, I don't think I'm unique in that. I truly wanted to find purpose in my life, and I wanted to lead a life that matters. And at that point, I started looking for purpose in life, and I wanted to leverage my experience as a higher education professional to do so. So it's at that point that I found International Education Corporation in late 2007, and that's when, along with colleagues, have taken on the responsibility of running this company.
Wonderful. When you talk about, I want to find my purpose and mission, and I know that in your book, you also talk about individuals and corporations needing to find their value, their mission, in a sense. What makes those values come to a space where you say, this is my mission, this is what I really want to do, this is who I want to be and how I want to serve?
Yeah, you know, it's not an individual quest. It's more of a collaborative effort. So, you know, every organization, like every country, has its own culture. Some organizations spend a lot of time developing their organizational culture, but some organizations don't do anything, but they still have their own specific, very unique culture. At IEC, we definitely took a deliberate approach in identifying values that overall together we held dear, and we made those values a part of who we are, and we acculturate all of our new colleagues within this organizational culture, and we make it a standard of excellence for all who join our organization. So it is a deliberate approach in making sure culture transcends across all of our disciplines and all of our functional verticals.
You bring a very good point, which is culture is something that you can also create. I think most of people know culture as something that is, and we just kind of walk into and form into whatever it is. And even when we're looking at leaders in companies and even CEOs in the companies, as they're coming from the external world, they're being hired. Not necessarily if a company is being run and put together from, you know, from zero and coming up. But if any of the people who are going through leadership, sometimes they walk into a culture of a company and it's as if that's given to them for them to follow. And they might not necessarily take the ownership that they can create culture and shift the culture in that sense. Or somebody comes into a company and says, I don't like this culture, and prematurely is going to shift to their individual culture or what they think that they have. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how to build this culture, how to instigate it, how to create it.
Yeah. You know, you have. I think every organization needs to identify its core on various levels and commit to that core. For example, we run a post-secondary education system. So for us, our students are at the core of all that we do. They're the ones whom we serve, and we align all of our departments and all of our functions around students, and we do everything in our power to ensure student success. Some of the values that play a part into that, you know, in our environment are focused on student learning, student service, student success. And of course, that also means that we have to always hire top talent and people who really are passionate about changing lives, serving students, and create learning communities conducive to peak performance, both on the employee side as well as our students. So, you know, and then we have a multi-site distributed organizational structure. So our many thousands of employees are not in one building. You know, we are in many, many states, many, many sites. So it's important we share the fundamental values of our culture so we can replicate and duplicate efforts regardless of the location we're in. So culture plays a very, very important role in our system, but also all organizations that have many, many sites, because you don't want to vary in the way you serve your customers based on location.
Very much, yes. Now, you talk about the culture of excellence. So two things that I would like to request from you. One, define excellence, because I think everybody has their own version of what excellence
is.
And then if you can tell us, what values have you come across through all the 25 years of experience have been in other organizations, nonprofit organizations, and profitable organization and education, what types of values you've seen that it brings the culture of excellence up?
That's excellent. That's an excellent question. To me, excellence means having a standard method of ensuring success for your customers. So whenever your customers are successful, and that means you have reached excellence. And whenever you exceed expectations consistently, in our cases with students, if we achieve success consistently from location to location, student to student, program to program, over a period of time, that to me is achieving excellence. And the way I define excellence is consistency. Everybody can be fantastic once or twice, but when you consistently perform duties that produce successful results, that means you have achieved consistency. So to me, consistency is the mother of excellence in whatever organization that exists. Now, to address your second question about what values are important, you know, there are thousands of values that various organizations have, and I can't say 5 or 10 are better than the other 1 million. It just all depends on the organization and what values they hold dear and what values work for them. For us, what has really been very, very productive and the values that have produced results for us are values that empower people, our colleagues, because if they're successful, our students are successful. It empowers them to become the CEOs of their position. You know, I have the title of CEO, but I consider every member of our community at all of our sites to also be the CEOs of their positions, regardless of their title or position or job description. We empower every single employee to truly be in charge of everything that they do. We empower them to make decisions. We empower them to take action. We are completely okay with people making mistakes, but we want them to own what they do. If they make mistakes, it's okay as long as they say, we've made a mistake and we move forward. I think a lot of times many organizations focus on who did it, who made the mistake, and who's responsible so they can fire the person, more so than they are in finding solutions to difficult problems. We, on the other hand, focus a lot on finding the problem, making that 10% of the entire continuum, but spending 90% on finding solutions to problems. And if you can imagine, if all of the employees of an organization feeling empowered to own their positions and making decisions on every day to serve the customer, you can imagine how powerful the organization could become, as opposed to an organization that expects its managers and leaders to continuously on a daily basis tell people what to do.
So
I'm
hearing you saying that a culture of interdependency, not a dependent group of people who are only looking at the high above to dictate to them everything, or for the leadership on top or executive management to actually assume that they're going to micromanage every aspect, not allowing the ownership for that. And your value system of every person take on the culture of being a CEO of your position, taking ownership, accountability, taking the responsibility of communicating their expectation and the need of your whole team, the concept of the team and everybody is the team. Also read in your book that fewer words and a little bit more of the numbers and looking at the results. And I think the most important aspect also, how to confront when you fall short in an empowering way. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, when it comes to accountability, and again, that kind of falls under the umbrella of ownership and being the CEO of your position. Accountability is something everybody covets, but very few people truly want it once they have it.
Right.
You know, I think people in general love being told what they do, although they hate it at the same time.
Yes.
I've noticed that over the years that in our culture, people who love being accountable and in charge and make decisions and take action do very well with us. And then a lot of people who say they want to be accountable and they say they want to make decisions, when given the power, they crumble and they can't deal with the anxiety and the stress of having to make decisions. So although a lot of people don't like to be told what to do on a daily basis, when they're given the power to do so, they make the conclusion that it's not for them. And that's okay. Again, I always tell people it's not about right or wrong, good or bad. It is what it is. But in our culture, we want people, regardless of title, even if we have security officers or custodians, we want them to run their business and we want them to be in charge. And they get the respect and the power and the control like any other title that we have. But they need to be ready to execute and take action and make decisions and not wait for somebody to tell them what to do.
It's very important when you are totally responsible for the result that you create. I mean, as a human being, if we do that in all aspects of our life, but especially in corporations where the results are very much tangibly set, like there's a goal and a result that is set for everyone together as a common goal, which is, might be different in the different areas of our life, where my result might be something that I'm choosing to create and I could create like a vague concept which can't, you know, I won't be held responsible for, or I can justify and come a lot of excuses in why that result was just created that way. But in organizations, since numbers matter and they, you know, the measurement tool is by numbers, then being responsible for those numbers from whatever place and a position we are makes it makes the concept and the culture of excellence to mm-hmm. move forward as a team, as I hear you.
Yes, correct. Absolutely. Yes.
So the other conversations that I had read in your beautiful book, it's looking at different types of values. And one of them was creating urgency, which was very interesting for me, that you had put creating urgency on top of one of the values. Say a bit more about why.
Yes. Again, it's parts of a culture, right? Again, it's not about right or wrong, good or bad, but in our culture, having a sense of urgency is very, very important because we want every single member of our community to move quickly. Again, we don't want rash decisions. We want thoughtful decisions, but we want quick actions because a lot of these actions lead to better service and better focus on students. So we want people to move very, very quickly so things don't pile up. I mean, things have a tendency, if you don't take care of them immediately, they have a tendency to pile up and you end up having 100 things to do in a day. But if you take care of it immediately, you don't have to. So instead of making lists of all the things you've got to do, if you just do it as they come up, you achieve them and you serve the customers immediately. So having that sense of urgency of making decisions and taking actions is critical. Now, with that said, I also have to say organizations have to be open to the possibility of being okay with that, because a lot of organizations have committees, they have chain of command, and so a lot of their employees are truly can't make quick decisions because they have to go through the bureaucratic channels and they have to meet in committees and go through the chain of command to be able to take action and make important decisions. So organizations have to be okay with their employees at all levels to make quick decisions and take action with a sense of urgency. You can't use the sense of urgency as a value if you're not willing to support that kind of behavior with your employees.
And you also talk about utilizing intuition. Intuition is one of those words which is very interesting, because especially when it comes to looking at numbers, when it comes to in an organization where there's a common goal that you have to go forward and you have uppers that you have to listen to and all of that, where is it that you're actually looking at intuitive sense? Is it that you're talking about it in the relations between and among people, coworkers or management or with students or possibly decision making, that they're bringing their intuition? And how do they know how to touch and inspire themselves within that type of an intuition?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So I've got to stop saying that because all your questions have been excellent
Thank
so
you.
Far. when we talk about intuition, most organizations, and we're not an exception, because we are very analytically based organization. We make decisions based on evidence. We are very analytical. We are very report driven. And I think a lot of larger organizations are that way. But there comes a point that you have to use your gut and your intuition to go with what you believe is right. For example, when I interview people, this is for me personally, you always look at experience and you always look at expertise based on the person's background. And of course, beyond that, you always try to gauge cultural fit with the person. But then when it comes to 2 to 3 people, you have to ultimately make a decision. And as analytical as you can be, you have to use your gut to say this person is gonna fit best within your team and this person is gonna work best with all the team players and within the culture and within the community you have developed. Because every person you employ, even when you have very clear standards and values for your culture, every person you add to your organization inherently will influence your culture. So you've got to be very cautious in how you hire people. And we, you know, that's, for example, for me, that's when I use my intuition. And, you know, I'm not very good at it. I would say, I have to say, I'm 50-50 when it comes to hiring people. But there's so much analytics can do when you're dealing within an organization that has people, whether, and you're, you know, for us, it's all about service and people, because our, you know, you have your employees and plus your customers are people. So we don't have products to sell. So you, intuition plays a big role in contributing to your success.
So it's interesting because you talked about bringing top talent into your team. Mm-hmm. And when you say that when we're, you know, you bring people within whatever the resume that they bring, and you see it on the table, and then you look at them, and something within your gut tells you whether they're relatable or not, or are they authentic or not, are they passionate about what they're doing or not, and somehow all of those which are not necessarily measurable within what the resume says, mm-hmm. it gives you in that relatedness a little bit of a hint of, is this person going to be a part of the culture of excellence and passion and giving and that you want to create for your students in that empowerment? How else do you find your top talents? How would you tell our listeners and viewers into focus on finding their top talent?
You know, it is arguably one of the most difficult accountabilities of people within organizations. I think identifying, recruiting, integrating, training, developing, coaching top talent is one of the most difficult accountabilities I have, and I can speak for most of our executives and managers and leaders within our organization. It is one of the most difficult accountabilities, but it is one of the top three accountabilities everyone has, regardless of function, because we are in a people business, and we're only as good as the people we bring on. So we spend a lot of time continuously. We not only recruit top talent, when we have open positions, we recruit top talent even we don't have open positions. So one of my advices to everybody is to always have a pipeline and a bench of top talent, whether there are openings or not, because you will always have a need for people who can influence your culture and influence your organization to continue to sustain greatness. So that is definitely one of the most important things managers should do. But also the other very, very important variable is, once you hire top talent, is to keep them engaged, develop them, acculturate them, assimilate them within the organization, but also empower them to make decisions and learn and contribute. You know, a lot of organizations hire amazing people with fantastic bandwidth, but then they continuously tell them what to do. You know, to me, top talent is, you've got to hire them, develop them, train them, coach them, but then let them do their thing. I mean, that's the value they bring, because if you don't, they will never be happy, they'll never be satisfied, and they'll look for something else and leave, because top talent doesn't want to be in a stale environment where they're told what to do on a daily basis.
And to continue appreciating them, because yes. Top talent does not accept irrelevancy. So if you tell mm-hmm. them that you either do it my way or you're irrelevant, or if mm-hmm. they didn't create the top numbers, then you're irrelevant, mm-hmm. and then your positions are laid off and all example of that, the concept of appreciating when you find someone who's a top talent or create and empower for them to strive toward being one, appreciation and gratitude also goes a long, long way.
Oh, absolutely true. Yes.
Everyone, you are listening and watching us. We're talking to Dr. Fardot Fateri. He's an author of The Culture of Excellence, his new book, The Art, Discipline, and the Practice of Breakthrough Leadership. Don't go anywhere because we're going to come back and talk to Dr. Fateri more, especially about new perspective, the one looking at all of it as one. We'll be right back.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice, Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan. Dr. Fushan has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice, Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk, KMET, 1490 AM, and on the Internet Stream.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fushan Zain. You can get it now at Fushan.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Dr. Fushan Zain is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fushan has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fushan.com. That's www.fushan.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking to Dr. Fardot Fateri and his new book, A Culture of Excellence, the Art, Discipline, and Practice of Breakthrough Leadership. So, Dr. Fateri, you wrote about using perspective. And then I was reading, I'm like, oh, that's an interesting concept, using perspective. And then I started looking at, what do you mean by using perspective? And then you had written, like, can we have a perspective of being one? So can you talk about that?
Yeah, you know, many organizations have excellent ideas, excellent plans and strategies to do various things that they want to do. However, before engaging their people and before getting buy-in, they start executing. So one of the things that we do here at IEC, and I think it's a best practice across the board, because I've seen lots of organizations do it and do it effectively, is to make sure the entire organization buys into it. It doesn't matter if it's a great idea or a bad idea or a mediocre idea, but when everybody buys in, when everybody understands the mission, when everybody is included, that culture of inclusiveness, and when everybody provides their opinions and their input, and when everybody becomes a part of the whole, they start focusing on making sure you get the best results. You could have the best plan, but if your team members are not engaged, and have not bought into it, you may not get the results that you had originally anticipated, no matter how thoughtful the idea was. So our thinking here is to make sure there is engagement from all levels and everybody starts acting and behaving as one unit, one family, one community, and not moving in different directions. So on creating simplicity in organizations and making sure everybody understands the true levers of the business and having all of them acting and behaving as one is a perspective, and it's a value we truly treasure and we work on a lot, because it takes more time to do it this way, but we rather have three great achievements as opposed to 100 poor performances with great ideas.
As you were talking, it reminded me of our bodies, where each organ, each part of our body needs to take excellent care of itself and do its function in the ultimate level. However, it's all doing it in the goal of the one, the whole what person, to move forward and have that type of an interdependency. And as I was hearing you, being, as we started our conversation, being the CEO of your own position, no matter what position you have, from the president, CEO, all the way, as you say, people who are coming there and doing frontliners or being at the beginner positions, when every single position, the person owns it, takes care of themselves, they're responsible for every decision they make, but they do it in the bigger goal of the whole company and the benefit of their clients, mm-hmm. and how they in an excellent way deliver the product that they give, then as a unit the company moves forward and therefore it benefits everyone else as one. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hearing from
very well summarized.
So you also talk about kindness versus weakness. I know that one of the beefs that I keep hearing in mm-hmm. with my clients who come in, I also do business coaching in my sessions. One of the biggest beef I hear is that I go to a company, put my 100% mm-hmm. and give of myself to make sure that I'm doing everything for them. But sometimes then they take it for granted and they don't take that my kindness, my way of being, my bringing my 100% is a gift that I'm bringing. Sometimes I'll do above and beyond what my position and job description says. I go above and beyond the hours that is expected of me just to be my excellent. And mm-hmm. then they take, you know, the other group, maybe other employees or even administration and executives take this as if like, oh, it's an opportunity. If they're giving, we're just going to take. Mm-hmm. What do you say about that? And when you're talking about excellent, you know, leaderships.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, I think based on people's, you know, we're all, I'm sure you agree that we're all products of our memories and experiences, right? Whomever we are today, we are this way because of all of our experiences and memories we've had. And most people are used to working in organizations and they equate effectiveness in general. I think organizations have improved a lot. Leadership has improved a lot. But a lot of people believe aggressiveness equals top achievement, or somebody that's kind is also weak. So, you know, in our culture at IEC, we always say that our expectation of everybody, regardless of title and position, is we expect everyone to be professional, respectful, and always preserve the dignity of others and make sure that ends and crosses all departmental boundaries. You know, a lot of people, again, are not used to this because it is very easy to get angry and raise your voice and get emotional and sometimes shout at people and sometimes be rude and disrespectful. You know, we don't tolerate that at IEC. And with that said, one of the things we always do say is that people shouldn't mistake kindness with weakness. Just because we are kind and just because we are respectful and professional all the time doesn't mean that we don't have high expectations. I think that is a part of a culture that always has to be defined and explained, because sometimes people think just because you're kind and friendly and professional, you may not have high expectations for superior performance and high achievement. We tell everybody, you know, we manage and lead through recognition and appreciation and not fear and intimidation. Both work. You know, people who are fearful and are intimidated perform for you, but they are the same people who will never speak up, they will never speak out, and the minute they find another job, they will leave you. So to build loyalty, you always have to, you know, coach in private and praise in public. You know, everybody needs to be coached, but you don't have to do it in front of everyone and embarrass your colleague. You can always take him aside and say, you know, you did all these things right, but you've got to focus on these one or two areas of opportunity. So again, I think leading in a culture that values employees and appreciates them and recognizes them deliberately and continuously is very difficult, because it takes time. And I think in many cases, it takes people out of their elements because they may not be used to it. But it is effective because it builds loyalty, because people always want to work for superiors. They want to work for an organization that supports them and makes them want to come to work. Because we spend more time at work than we do at home. And
yes.
So it's important that for people to go to work being happy and being satisfied. So when Sunday evening comes, they're not thinking, oh, my weekend is over, I've got to go to work again, and I can't stand it. We want people who are excited Sunday night and Sunday evening for Monday to come, because it's a different part of their life. It's not necessarily good or bad. It's creating harmony between your personal life and your professional life, as opposed to creating balance. Because, you know, when you're in an organization with the higher level positions, balance may not exist, but you have to have harmony between what you have to do personally and professionally.
There was a research that came up that said, it was a survey, I think, that said that people's highest rate of death was actually Mondays at 8 o'clock or 9 a.m. in the morning, because people just didn't want to go to work. So based on what you were saying, is at least we'll have good, live and healthy employees and teams, members to work with. Also, that they will listen to you, but they won't have to fear you. They would actually respect you. And when you work in an environment that you feel respected and respect your colleagues and people you work with, you want to go there. You'll be passionate about going. You know, people get bored. They need to be stimulated. They need to feel productive. And they love to go to a work environment that people are sitting there together with, you know, being loving and kind and yet very, very productive and get positive messages. For the last conversation, which I think is very important, you also talk about expressing authenticity, which I think creates such a level of trust between the members of a community that are there together so many hours to create a goal, a common goal for each other. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. You know, authenticity as opposed to being fake, I think is terribly important everywhere. But in this context, we're talking about organizations. So it's very important in the sense that it builds trust. I think that people, whether you're hiring new colleagues for your organization or whether you are having meetings or whether you're interacting with your existing team members, Being totally and fully authentic is important because, in a way, you're respecting your colleagues. Because when you're not authentic, when you try to be something you're not, it comes through. Again, it comes down to that intuition we talked about a little earlier. I think people have a great bandwidth when it comes to assessing authenticity in people or not. So, you know, all of us do it. When we listen to people on TV, especially politicians or various people, we immediately start thinking, is this person authentic or not? They don't have to be right. They don't have to be wrong. They don't have to be good. They don't have to be bad. But authenticity buys you trust. And in organizations today, in my opinion, it's terribly important because a lot of people are very skeptical and many times cynical about authority. So authenticity is very, very important. So people at least know you're being real and genuine and you're making yourself vulnerable. And I think vulnerability is a value that people underappreciate in society these days because they look at it as a weakness sometimes. I think it's a strength and so is authenticity. You know, I hear the term a lot of times, fake it till you make it. But to me, people are more prone to support you if you're authentic. And if you ask for help, if you ask for support, as opposed to faking like you know what you're doing, you cannot build a team through a lack of authenticity. And if you do build a team, you won't have a successful one that will sustain that level of vigor that you anticipate in your team.
Wonderful. Dr. Faradat Fateri, who has created and it's an ebook, A Culture of Excellence, The Art, Discipline, and the Practice of Breakthrough Leadership. Dr. Fateri, where can people get your book?
Actually, the book is also sold in paperback format. Right. It should be available anywhere, but the most accessible place is Amazon. Mm-hmm. My co-author, James York, and I are very excited to have that. It is available in digital format, but it's also available in paperback. Amazon, I think everybody has access to that. It's probably yes. the fastest and most accessible way to the book.
Do you have the audio yet?
We have audio yet, but I can check. But I know it's in digital format and as well as paperback.
Paperback. Thank you so much. It was great to read your book. I learned a lot from your book, and it was a joy to have you on my show.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you very much for the invitation. I enjoyed the conversation.
And for everyone who's watching and listening, it was a joy being with you. Create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you this week, and I'll see you back here next week.